watch a few of my favorite rom-coms with you.
Harry met Sally.
Lena met Katie.
We're your quirky best friends
and your leading ladies. Meet cute or online date. Is love an algorithm, scripted or fate? It's the rom-com effect. We're here to be direct about the love we expect in the movies we dissect. We sometimes have a guest.
Does it pass the Bechdel test?
We're on a movie watching quest.
Because with romance, we're obsessed.
It's a rom-com effect. It rhymes with rom-com effect.
Rom-com!
Love them.
Hello. Hello! Welcome back
to the rom-com effect.
I'm Katie.
I'm Lena.
And Lena fucked up our title earlier.
Yeah, I did. I accidentally said rom-com pod.
Like, whoopsies.
I'm getting used to it.
But we're excited today because we have a fun, classic, early 2000s movie to talk about, which is The Wedding Planner.
Yes, we're going to chat about The Wedding Planner, classic with Matthew McConaughey and good old J-Lo.
And we also have a wonderful guest with us.
Caitlin Gilbert.
Hi, I'm here.
Yay.
Very excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
Oh my Thanks gosh. For Thank coming. You so much for coming on.
Very excited. Kate, I love rom-coms.
Yes.
So do we.
Yeah. Well, good.
Just so you know, we also love them.
What?
I know this is a surprise, but...
Spread the word.
So, Caitlin is my dear, dear friend from college. We also were roommates.
Uh-huh.
And now we do improv together.
Yes.
And I feel like you and I have had a lot of talks about rom-coms. We both love romance.
We do.
Yeah.
And calm.
And I've seen Caitlin perform probably 4 or 5 times. That's how I know her.
Yes.
That actually makes me feel really cool.
She's a little improv celeb on the indie circuit.
Yes. Not any more than either of these two are. So.
I just like the idea of being an improv celeb on the indie circuit.
Me too. That's all I want.
Well, we've made it.
Oh, we did it.
Great. We achieved our dreams. Caitlin, could you tell us your experience with rom-coms? Like, what are your faves growing up?
Yeah, I was actually thinking about it. I was trying to think of the first rom-com I ever watched, and I couldn't because I think they've always been there, you know? Like, I feel like as long as I watched movies that had people in them and weren't cartoons, I've been watching rom-coms. And I remember... This, I'm really giving you my whole life story, but I remember...
That's what we want. Tell us your life story. That's why we had you on.
You had rom-coms on headphones in the womb.
Yeah, yeah. My mom watched. No, I remember my mom and my sister went to go see Runaway Bride,
yes.
And I was too little. I must have been, I couldn't tell you when that movie came out, but I think I was like maybe 7.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom had the soundtrack, and they would play it, and they would be like... Oh, this was the part when she ran away or whatever. And I was so jealous because I wanted to see it. And I was just so ready for the rom-com phase of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, and then ever since then, I've consumed them like crazy. All-time favorite, You've Got Mail.
Yes, absolutely. That was our first
one. I mean, it has to be. That's classic. And also, yeah. I love it so much. Just as a movie, but also it's based on, I'm sure you went into this, the play that it's based on, there's also a musical called She Loves Me based on the play, and I saw that in New York a couple of years ago, and I loved it so much too, and I just love that story. I love a rom-com where the two people hate each other. That's so
They're
important.
So good.
It's so important.
You have to hate
you
each other first.
You have to hate each other first, otherwise I'm not interested. It's just perfect, and I love it.
Do you have any favorite like rom-com leads?
Yeah. I mean, Meg Ryan, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Reese Witherspoon. I weep for what could have been of Katherine Heigl. If
they had given her more chances.
Yeah. Yeah.
She
wasn't an asshole. I don't know which one is true.
Yeah, I don't either. I'm starting to think maybe she wasn't that big of an asshole.
I don't know.
I've heard some wonderful things about
her.
Okay,
good, because I really love her.
So the town I'm from in Colorado, the university there is known for its veterinary program. And she...
I can't wait to hear where this is going.
Katherine Heigl apparently would fly in with her dog, who was very ill.
Oh my god.
To get the best veterinary care in the nation that she could for her dog.
Yeah.
Wow.
At CSU Vet Hospital.
That's the best veterinary care in the nation.
I mean, it's up there.
Wow. Good to know.
Yeah. I made a documentary for their equine program. Fresh out of college.
Really cute.
It's called Horse Sense.
Horse sense.
Yeah, it was actually very fun to me. But we'll watch that another
time. Yeah, we can do another episode. I'll come back.
Yeah.
Yeah, she seems really cool. She lives in Utah.
Really?
With her children, and she's living the Mormon dream. I don't know that she's Mormon, but I think she was raised Mormon.
Hmm.
And, yeah.
She's very into keeping her family out of the line.
Yeah, which I think
you have
cool.
to respect. I think that's nice.
Yeah, I'm also a diehard Grey's Anatomy fan.
Yeah.
In sort of the story there is that she was kind of a nightmare, and that's why she ended up getting off the show. So I'm sort of like, I realize I don't have to take sides, but I also feel like I do have to take sides.
We can also definitely talk more about Grey's Anatomy because there is a connection between The Wedding Planner and Grey's Anatomy.
Yes!
Very excited to get there. Mm-hmm. But I love 27 Dresses. I think that is probably one of my favorite rom-coms. It's great.
I haven't seen it in so long.
I've probably seen it 27
times. I actually only saw it the one time.
Oh my gosh. Oh, you should rewatch it. It's
we'll
great.
Definitely do it.
We have to do that soon. That's
a good one. I had it on DVD and I would watch it all the time. I also wrote Pride and Prejudice because I was feeling like being pretentious.
It's the first thing I talked about when we were recording our first episode was I started talking about Pride and Prejudice. Sort of accidentally, but I think about it all the time.
It's like the original rom-com,
It is the first rom-com, besides Shakespeare.
Whatever.
Whatever.
Whatever rom-com
written by a woman, unless you believe Shakespeare was also a woman. And wow, this case, is a can of worms.
But I do think it's the basis for so many rom-coms. I mean, Bridget Jones, most notably.
And they hated each other.
And they hated each other, and I need it. I need them to hate each other. I need someone to be hot and rich, and the girl to be kind of whatever.
And that snappy dialogue.
Yes.
The girl to be bright and biting and witty.
Yeah,
and
thank you.
Love walking.
Mm. And so, you gotta love walking.
Sometimes I think about Pride and Prejudice and the life she would lead, where she just, with her friends, their version of socializing was to send a letter to a friend who lived in a different town and be like, hey, can I stay with you for 3 weeks?
Yeah, that's insane.
And they just stay and visit at each other's houses for a month at a time because they didn't have jobs.
Right.
And then they just spend time together and then go on 2-hour long walks every day. I'm like, that sounds great.
It's a dream. Elizabeth went to go visit Mr. Bentley and got sick and stay there for months.
Yeah.
That's insane.
What?
I want to watch a modern rom-com where that happens, you know?
That'd be beautiful.
That would be hilarious.
I was kind of thinking about it. I went to visit my friend in Seattle a couple months ago, and I just invited myself up there. And we did go on long walks.
Oh, we're living that Pride and Prejudice life.
It was great.
Walks are underrated as a hang option.
I agree with that.
I want to do that more.
I used to do that with my best friend in high school. My mom would yell at me about exercising, so we would just go walk, and we would walk for 2 hours and just chat, and it was great. Anyway.
All right.
I had one more,
I wanted
to share. And if you ever cover this film, I have to come back because it's kind of a off-the-path rom-com, but do you guys remember Fever Pitch?
Yes.
Oh,
I remember.
Jimmy Fallon and Drew.
Yes, Jimmy Fallon, which is insane.
I know.
He's an adorable
rom-com
male lead, though.
I think, I can't even begin to describe to you how much I loved that movie when it first came out, because it's all I thought about for weeks. I saw it at a sleepover.
Wow.
We went to go see it, and then we came back to my friend's house, and everyone was wanted to talk about other things, and I couldn't let it go. I was like, we have to talk about Fever Pitch.
Fever Pitch.
I loved it so much.
Remember that scene when on their first date, she gets sick and he takes care of her? I think about that all the time. I still think about
that. That's so beautiful.
I'm like, that's the sign that a guy really cares about you because he's not going to try to get in your pants because he has to take care of you while you're barfing and gross.
Right. Right. And in retrospect, it's insane because his whole conflict was he had to choose between her and baseball.
And he's being such a jerk the rest of the movie.
He's
so
stupid.
I'll go to your thing, but I want to watch this game
first.
He
has season tickets and he can't miss a single game. And she has a high-powered job. Oh, my God.
Anyway, we'll do Fever Pitch later. And we'll have to.
I can't wait. I've forgotten so much about it.
It's insane. And I haven't watched it. Yeah, I haven't watched it in probably 10 years. So
yeah, same with me.
I would love to watch it again.
I had a movie like that where I couldn't let go of it for like 3 weeks when I was like, I don't know, 14 years old. Uh-huh. And it was When a Date with Tad Hamilton.
Oh, also a fantastic film.
Yeah. I just couldn't talk about anything but Tad Hamilton for a while.
It's so funny. I saw something on Twitter recently that someone was talking about. I can't cite who it was. Somebody very funny and brilliant, I'm sure. But they said that they were obsessed with some actor in a movie and then realized it was their sexual awakening. And I was like, holy shit, it was my sexual awakening, Jimmy Fallon. Because that is so dark. I don't know if I would hear that.
So let's talk about the movie we all came here to discuss.
The Wedding Planner.
Yes. It was directed by Adam Shankman, who directed What Men Want, actually.
Oh.
The Pacifier.
Oh, love that.
Hairspray.
Hairspray. Walk to Remember.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
He has a pretty long, diverse resume. Yeah.
Pretty random. Oh, Bringing Down the House with Queen Latifah and wow. Steve Martin.
I don't think I've
a lot of early
one.
2000s hits.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway. Guys, tell me if this is actually a good amount of money. I'm not sure if it is. Apparently, this movie only made $94 million worldwide.
That's not very good.
That's not good. In my mind, I thought this was a much more successful rom-com.
I mean, here's the deal. It probably cost less than $30 million to make, so it was a money maker, but that's not... I mean, when we were talking about what women want, it made over $300 million.
Yes.
Wow. Yeah, I can't imagine people overseas were very excited to watch this.
Because there wasn't a lot of physical comedy, which is what translates internationally.
Although she does almost get hit by a dumpster.
And the horse.
The horse
in the tree thing.
Yeah. I don't know.
I wouldn't call it... That wasn't very funny, though. That was kind of scary.
It is interesting because I think J-Lo is a huge international star.
Right. That's what I was wondering is, like, because I remember J-Lo always being famous.
Yeah.
I can't place where she was in her career at this point.
She had done Selena probably 10 years before that, I want to say, or something like that.
What year was The Wedding Planner?
Wedding Planner came out in 2001. Oh. But I was looking at her IMDb, and, like, early 2000s is when she started branching out of, like, she had done Selena, and then she had been in a bunch of, like, action movies or, like, thrillers.
Didn't do very well,
no.
I think.
And then Angel Eyes, I remember that movie. That was very dramatic. But this, and then Made in Manhattan, and then Gigli,
and
Monster-in-Law. Like, all of a sudden, people were like, wait, she's actually good at rom-coms. So that, I think, tipped the scale for her movie career. So it wasn't just like, oh, a singer trying to be an actress. It was like, oh, no, she's a full package deal.
She was a singer first.
She was.
Right?
Okay, she was a fly girl first on In Living Color. She was a dancer.
Oh, okay.
And then she started singing and performing and doing the whole thing.
Great. Good to know.
Yeah, I would say that was, like, the 90s when she became a huge pop star.
Yeah. I feel like Selena was 97. That's just out of my brain for some reason. But I don't know if that's true.
We're not going to look it up.
Yeah,
have to look it up.
I don't want to know.
And tweet us later, maybe.
Interactive. She died in the early 90s. So
we're upsetting someone very much.
No, that is very sad.
But Made in Manhattan...
She died in 95.
Oh.
So, the movie must have come out, like, a couple years later.
Yeah, waited a little bit.
Yeah.
I'm going to look it up because I'm curious.
It doesn't seem like they waited very long, though.
Yeah, no, they barely.
I was right, 1997.
Oh, wow.
We're going to start cracking a year later.
That means they were writing script, like, right after her funeral and packaging
that's
the deal.
That's so dark.
Yeah, that's real dark. But people love that
movie. Too soon. But it's a great movie.
Yeah.
I really like that movie.
So, do you guys remember watching this, like, the last time you saw it, or, like...
I think of this as a staple that I've seen probably a half dozen times over the years. It's probably something that was, like, on cable.
Yeah.
You know, when I was, like, at soccer tournaments or whatever, and we'd, like, put on in the background. I hadn't sat down and watched it in... I don't know, 15 years probably. And I enjoyed it. You know, I always thought of it as like a sweet one, but not one of my favorites, to be sure.
Yeah.
Even though it has a lot of things I love, it has Judy Greer.
Oh my God, I totally forgot that she was in this.
She's always the quirky best friend.
She's so good.
She was born to play that role.
She really was.
This is just going to be a Judy Greer podcast.
Yeah. She's in all of the movies.
She's in all of the rom-coms we're talking about. She's in What Men Want as well, or What Women Want.
Oh, that's... She's in all of them.
Yeah, she's the intern.
She's in 27 Dresses.
She is. One of her greatest best friend sidekick roles.
Yes, very good. Very sex positive role, which is nice.
But yeah, I don't know. So it was like, I had fun watching it today. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed it again. And I was also like, some of these jokes do not hold up. But but overall, like, I like J-Lo as the leading lady.
She's great.
She's a lot of fun.
I think also, I like could not stop staring at her because she is so beautiful.
She's gorgeous.
Her lips.
She's stunning. Yeah.
Yeah, her face is perfect. She literally her has eyes. Her hair.
She's perfect.
She's her gorgeous.
Hair is like back most of the time, but and like she's very harsh.
Gorgeous,
and like she's playing a type A character, but I just can't believe that she's not swimming in dick. I just I'm like, why are you?
She's too busy, Lena.
Why are you doubting yourself? Like she's a
career woman.
They Massimo sell it. They really sell loves it. Her.
He really loves her, but she's better than Massimo. We're gonna have to talk about Massimo later.
We'll get there.
I have a similar experience with Wedding Planner where I saw it a bunch when I was a kid, saw it on airplanes, saw it on reruns on TV. I always really liked it. I'm not a huge Matthew McConaughey fan, mm-hmm. but I think he's the most attractive in this movie.
What?
And in Contact. And in Contact. Why? Because he's got glasses, and for some reason I thought he looks cute.
He looks amazing.
Eyebrows are so stupid.
You guys say
they made me angry.
He's a doctor, guys. He's a pediatrician. He needs glasses.
Yes, the pediatrician part is very attractive.
Yeah. I did forget that part, and then he kept coming up, and I was like, wait, oh, he's a doctor.
Where did I write this down?
Oh, I wrote his
terrible glasses on MM. Actual note from my notebook. I hate those tiny glasses.
I was like, ooh, swoon, glasses.
I wrote his stupid little glasses.
Thank you, Kayla. And let it be known, I love a man in glasses. Okay.
I think he looks good in glasses.
I'm more
his
of a...
His hair is terrible, though. He needed to fix that hair.
Yeah, they were too... What were they doing? They were those early 2000s.
Yeah, the wire glasses.
And also, there is a scene where all I could look at, it was when they were in the sculpture garden, and unfortunately, dear listeners, you can't see this, but the way he has his glasses hooked behind his ear, the hook for his glasses appears to be about a mile above his ear, and I'm like... What? Why?
He doesn't even know how to wear those glasses.
Yeah.
Katie's impression was dead on just for all of you listening.
But now that I know that that's what Lena finds attractive.
No, and my other favorite version of Matthew McConaughey is in the movie Contact with Jodie Foster. And he's a sexy theologian. His hair is longer and very good looking. And he wears these long coats with like a thick scarf.
Oh my god, I'm picturing this and it's awful.
I don't know if I like this. He's a beach guy to me.
Yeah. I need him in a Birkenstock.
I know. I want him out of his element.
Why are you trying to put shitty glasses and bundle up Matthew McConaughey?
He's not body free.
He needs to be shirtless and contacts in on the beach.
Nice and tan.
Drinking out of a coconut.
Also, yes. I have to say, I was not a fan of the blonde hair. It looked
Is his hair more blonde?
It looked very bottle blonde.
He looked very, very slight. Like a lesser man.
He looked like a lesser man.
I didn't feel like I was getting the full McConaughey.
Yeah. Okay.
I love, all right, guys. I love McConaughey.
Yeah, me too.
So, watching this movie today, I mostly still liked it. I thought it was funny, sweet. Mm-hmm. I found it a little bit grosser how Matthew McConaughey, like, his character's name is Steve Edison, how him and Mary meet and how he's, like, very handsy with her and, like...
No.
He's engaged, and he goes on a date with her, basically, and never tells her he's engaged and all that stuff. I was just kind of like, it was harder as an adult to watch it and be like, no, this guy's like a sleazeball and he'll probably cheat on her too, is kind of how I felt. Ooh. It's kind of how I felt. It's tough. We'll talk about that. We can debate that later. Yeah. Caitlin, your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm in kind of the same boat as you guys. I can't remember the first time I saw it, but I know that I've seen it several times, probably on TBS, probably through renting it at Blockbuster, you know.
All recent.
Oh. Yeah, yeah. All very recent experiences.
Renting it on the Netflix DVD plan.
Yeah, not even that recent. No. Yeah, and I couldn't tell you last time I saw it. So it was interesting because I didn't exactly remember what happened. I mean, I knew what happened, but I didn't remember it that well.
It was fun because there were some surprises.
Yeah. And I have the same feeling as you, Lena, where I was like, wait. He's getting married and he's sitting on the wedding planner. That reads gross in this day and age.
Yeah.
But, you know, in general, I enjoyed it. I love rom-coms, so I'm happy to watch people fall in love no matter what.
Yeah.
No matter what.
No matter what.
And he was skeezy enough to make her hate him initially.
Yes. So I'm glad we had that happening.
Yeah. And they do, like, openly argue about that. Like, she does. Like, one thing I liked about this movie that I didn't remember, obviously, is that, like, she really does challenge him once she realizes that he is married to, or he's engaged to the woman she's planning a wedding for. She, like, accuses him in a sexy tango dance number.
Oh, that was fantastic. I love that.
Which is great.
The tropes in this were just hitting back to back, and I love it.
They're just having a heated argument while tangoing, while his actual fiance is on the phone. But, like, she's like, you're skeezy, you're just like every guy that I work with who I know is not to be trusted. How dare you do what you did? And he defends himself in a way that I'm like, okay, I guess technically you're right. You just wanted to see a movie.
No, that's crazy.
Oh, I did not buy it.
You didn't buy it?
Yeah. Oh, I just saw a movie. Like, the fact that he went with two single girls to a new location and didn't tell them that he was engaged is so gross.
It's so gross.
If my fiancé did that, I don't have one, but just hypothetically.
None of us have fiancés.
No.
So hello.
So hi. If I hate you, the next step is love.
It's a great message.
Yeah.
That's one of the healthy things we should take away.
Yeah, definitely.
Definitely pursue the people that you despise and hope they come around.
Yeah, because sooner or later you just won't be able to help yourself. But yeah, I thought it was very inappropriate and gross, and I didn't like it. I was like, what are you doing, man?
Yeah,
I totally agree.
Also, a small nitpicky thing, like, when she goes to the hospital and he takes care of her and they're in the doctor's office, she sees, like, a picture behind him, and she's like, oh, who's that? Is that your girlfriend? He's like, oh, no, that's my sister. And again, I'm like,
she wasn't coming to the wedding.
Yeah. She knew.
I'm like, you're engaged and you don't have a picture of your fiance in your office? Like, that's another sign. I'm like, this guy just is not committed to her.
Also, that's a perfect opportunity to be like, oh, no, this other photo is my fiance.
Oh, no, my fiance doesn't like any pictures of herself, so I don't have any. Yeah.
Oh, and here's another thing. When she sees that Steve Edison is the couple she's planning a wedding for, Fran, his fiance, says, oh, he hurt his hand saving an old lady, which means he lied to her.
I did not put that together.
He lied to her about who he saved, so he knew there was something
shady
to hide.
Shady.
Yeah. Matthew.
And J-Lo calls him out on that while they're tangoing.
I also was very confused by Fran calling him Eddie the whole time because I didn't catch that it was his last name. And also, why doesn't she just call him by
his
first name?
That was such an unnecessary...
I was so confused.
It was like another added layer of him lying because he's like, my name is Steve.
Yeah.
It was just like an unnecessary layer to prevent her finding out they were together.
That was something to put in there to save...
You're right.
I don't know.
I wasn't thinking critically when I watched this, so I was just like, she's dumb.
Speaking of unnecessary things, one of my favorite tropes in a rom-com is that quirky little thing that someone does that the other person picks up on that shows that they love them. Ugh. And every time I eat M&M's, to this day, I think about the fact that it's a total lie. the brown M&Ms yeah. have less artificial coloring in them than the other colors.
What a crazy line to think of.
Right? That had to have been a real thing where the writer was just like, I'm putting my quirk in there.
Yeah.
But that is a thing that I forgot it was from this movie, and it has stuck with me for my entire life.
It's also stuck with me. I do remember it's from the movie, but I do think about that too. And I was like, that can't be true, but I still will, like, think about it every time I eat
another. Yeah. The other M&M's thing that I think about all the time is in The Princess Diaries.
Oh, the pizza.
On the pizza. Yeah. And also on the keyboard, which was always very weird to me.
They never explained that.
They never explained it. My sister and I have talked about that at length over the years as to why the M&M's are on the keyboard. But the M&M's on the pizza is another thing where I'm like, delicious. Yes.
Yeah.
I think about that all the time. The pizza and M&M's. Every time I eat pizza, I'm like,
Yeah. I'm a big fan of M&M's. I love peanut M&M's.
Me too.
Peanut M&M's are my number one snack weakness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's a quick way to win me over.
When me and Caitlin went to the Fleetwood Mac concert, I was like, I have to go get a hot
dog. I was also there.
Oh, yeah, you were there.
Were you?
Just yeah. in another part of the stadium.
Uh-huh.
But I was like, Caitlin, I have to get a hot dog. And Caitlin was like, can you get me peanut M&M's?
And she did. And she missed the first two songs.
I had to go to the bathroom. So, and I told my friend Casey while we were waiting in line, I was like, I am so fucking stoked to hear the chain.
Oh,
I'm waiting in line for the bathroom and I like hear the drum and I was like, no!
Until we blow.
You're like, no!
Yeah, the first two songs were The Chain and Dreams.
So yeah. Like, it was a strong
But thank you start. For those peanut M&Ms. I mean, life changing.
Yeah. That was also a very cool concert to go to because it was right before Stevie Nicks. They announced, like, a couple days before that she was being twice inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
That was cool.
So that was pretty cool.
That was, like, the best concert I've ever been to in my life.
It was wonderful.
So
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Is this a Fleetwood Mac podcast?
Yeah, sure
because
is.
I'm here for that as well.
You know what? I bet Mary and Steve's wedding song is probably going to be Dreams by Fleetwood.
Great transition back.
Bringing it back. Do we want to talk about their meet cute?
Yes.
Yes. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
How exciting.
If we want to go back to the very, very beginning real quick, my very first note that I wrote down is, wow, 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 that opening song.
What was it?
It was just about, like, waiting around, knowing that one day your man's gonna be your...
Yeah, it was that song.
It was that song. It was... Oh my god, I was just like, this is setting
it. This is your only dream in life is to get married if you're a girl. Sorry.
Yeah. And one day he's just gonna appear. But their meet cute is a top notch meet cute.
It's a great meet cute. Yeah. The stakes are very high.
A taxi driver is trying to eat an ice cream cone while he drives, and the ice cream falls off his cone.
Yeah, and Mary is walking in heels, and her heel gets stuck in a
manhole
cover. Yeah. And there was, like, a little misdirect because the car misses her, but then he hits the dumpster, which starts
rolling down the road.
Careening down those San Francisco hills.
Yeah, also interesting, I feel like we don't get a lot of rom-coms set in San Francisco.
No, we don't.
No, we don't.
There's really a side convention for that one. But made the dumpster roll all that more believable.
Mm-hmm. Would not have worked in New York.
No.
No.
And then good old Steve Edison happens to see her and jumps and pushes her out of the way of the dumpster, lands perfectly on top of her, their faces so close they can breathe each other's air. And he stays there. He lingers there for a very long time.
She's also very out of it.
Yeah, she's definitely concussed.
And she does call him out on, why are you still on top of
him? Yeah.
Yeah, because he's a stranger.
And he lingers some more and then caresses her head a bit.
Yeah, he held her head a lot.
But it's okay because he's a pediatrician.
Right. I did, I did keep forgetting that he was a doctor, as I said, in that moment. I was like, why is he checking her out? Like, why does he think?
I've never had a doctor hold my head like that.
I wish they would. That sounds very nice.
But it was a great meet cute.
Yeah.
And another great part of that moment is the taxi driver is called back later in the movie during the chase scene. He is the driver that Matthew McConaughey gets when he hops in a taxi.
And he has a little neck brace on.
He does, yep. Because well, I didn't realize.
I did a bad job of putting stuff together. I was like, huh, something happened to him. Maybe the actor had a fall.
Yeah, that's why we get three of us together.
One thing that troubled me overall was the racist.
Yeah.
The racist parts of the representation of this Italian family.
Right.
And I wasn't sure how to feel about J-Lo playing someone who was Italian.
Right.
I felt weird about that, too.
It sort of felt like, well, we have to call out that she's not white, but do it in the most white way possible.
Yeah.
It
also, couldn't you make her Puerto Rican?
Yeah, exactly.
Why have to be Italian?
Yeah, that part was weird.
Because Justin Chambers' performance of Massimo, that accent could have been from anywhere.
It's Puerto Rican accent is probably very similar.
Yeah. And also, there was no reason for him to be that aggressively Italian either.
No.
That was such an interesting choice for that character.
And it felt like they were sort of like, look, he's foreign, so she couldn't possibly want him.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, a whole other thing.
Yeah, it definitely was. It was weird.
The part that bothered me about it was like erasing her own identity.
Right. Like, why don't we just let her be poor? Yeah. Exactly. No, that's a good point.
Yeah.
It's
I think I grew up thinking Italians were considered Latino because of this film. Because I was like, Jim's Italian. She's Latina. I don't understand.
It also leads to a very interesting discussion about arranged marriage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is a big part of this movie, and by implication is a part of Italian culture.
Sicilian culture? Because he explicitly says there's Sicilian.
Sicily.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think that's right.
It was strange.
Yeah, I don't know. No. I don't know. I think a lot more arranged marriages probably happen in the world than any of us are aware of.
Yeah, that's true.
But it was very interesting to me how big a part of the story it was, and also the theme of the movie, because you have this very big speech by Mary's father about how he wasn't at all attracted to her mother at first when they were married. Then he began to appreciate her.
Which is so sad.
And then appreciation turned into like...
Respect.
And respect turned into like. And eventually it turned into a love deeper than he could have ever imagined. Which is the best case scenario.
Yeah.
Right.
And his wife is dead, so we can't hear her side of the story.
Right.
That was dark.
Yeah. And then just...
I would like to believe she loved him a lot, too.
Yeah.
There's always a dead parent in a rom-com, too.
Yes. But then that message of love being something that is learned over time is something that Mary accepts as her own fate, at least temporarily, until she's talked out of it. So she's not even an advocate in her own decision about what love is to herself.
That is that was an analysis.
And I was thinking about too, like, what causes her to have such a cynical view on love? One, we learn her ex-fiance cheated on her with her friend or his high school sweetheart or whoever.
Married her.
Ugh. But then also, obviously, in planning all these weddings, she's seen a bunch of those weddings or marriages fail after
it becomes a pile of statistics to her.
Yeah.
She has a betting pool on how long the marriages are going to last. She knows the stats on if you choose this song or
if you
choose these flowers, how long your marriage is going to last.
Yeah.
But that's what it's become to her. It's become a business of numbers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So she's just like distrusting at this point that any man will actually be the partner she's dreaming of. And so there's all of that. And then I think a big theme in this movie is settling for someone who's good enough versus marrying the person of your dreams.
What if what I think is great really is great, but it's not as great as something greater?
Yeah. Choosing some kind of a a steady life versus choosing a great love.
Mm-hmm. So, are we...
Well...
That's not a central question of my life every day.
Is love real? Mary? Maria?
I don't know. I'm really sad that Andy Richter and his wife are divorcing. I wasn't even invested in their marriage, and apparently they are, and I'm fucking depressed about it.
And he tweeted, I'm going to tweet a lot of, like, getting divorced tweets now. And I was like, no, I
don't want to know. They have, like, a bunch of kids.
Yeah, and they've been married for, like, decades, and I just, I mean, I wasn't that, I'm not invested in Andy Richter's life. All right. But, like.
Sure.
I have love Andy Richter.
We are staring at an Andy Richter cardboard now, right now.
And behind it is an Andy Richter poster.
But I feel like I've heard of, like, lots of comedians talk about how Andy Richter and his wife, Sarah Tyre, were, like, the sweetest, nicest people in the biz, like, as a unit. And I guess hearing that that's also, they're not going to be together anymore, just makes me sad. That's all.
Yeah. I heard something interesting on The Real Housewives of New York City today.
Yes.
And one of the housewives, Ramona, her ex-husband, who I guess she's friendly with, was saying he thinks marriage should be like a contract that you renew. So you have like a 7-year contract. And then after 7 years, you can either be like, okay, no, we don't want to be married anymore. Or like, yeah, let's renew our contract for another 7 years. So that was sort of like take the stigma out of divorce and also change the way we think about marriage. And it kind of shook me because I was like, I don't know what to think about that because it sounds like a gross thing a dude says.
Yeah.
To justify having multiple women throughout their life. But also, is monogamy realistic? I don't know.
And it's smart in the sense that people can get comfortable and just be like, all right, we've decided we're going to be together forever. We don't need to keep making that much of an effort anymore.
Right, like asking yourself, choosing the person over and over again.
Yeah.
Well, one thing that I've heard from people who are in those kind of long-term relationships, whether it's married or just, like, committed to spending your life together without that particular ceremony, is that every day you wake up and you kind of, like, recommit. Every day you wake up and you, like, consciously think, I choose this person. And that to me seems like a realistic way to approach it. And it also gives agency. Yeah, I think so. Because it gives you agency over, I guess I could not choose them today, but because I have made this commitment to this person, I choose to choose them again today, and I will again tomorrow, but it's an acknowledgement that it requires effort, and just because you make that vow one time in front of your friends and family doesn't mean it's this unbreakable thing that is going to be the status quo forever. It is a daily exercise in choosing someone and showing you care and supporting them. And some days it's going to be easier than others, and some days you're not going to want to. But
yeah. Like, I don't think Steve/Eddie really chose Fran every morning when he woke up.
No, it's like they both fell into that relationship. Or they loved each other at one point, but then they were like, well, we've been together this long, I guess we should get engaged. Like, that's
right.
What seems to be
what
their
is,
couple.
I did really like that she seemed equally sort of like meh on it. I like that it wasn't her being so in love with him and so happy. It was more her being like, this is the right thing now. And her parents were obviously pressuring her.
And ridiculous.
And
they were ridiculous. They were hilarious.
I love a crazy over-the-top rich parent.
Yeah.
It's my favorite.
That is something that I've noticed. I'm hesitant to say it's a trope because it's not a fun trope. But it is an element of rom-coms that I've noticed over and over again in the ones that we've watched. And I think it was something we discussed in You've Got Mail, where obviously there are these other relationships that exist as a barrier to the relationship that we're working towards in the happy ending. And the way to get out of it with everyone still being likable is two people who've been together a long time suddenly realize, oh, we actually weren't that into each other at all.
Yeah, that's
and then
true.
You have this amicable split.
Yeah.
Because then it's not like, oh, somebody's heartbroken in this scenario.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would love to see breakup where someone actually comes out looking kind of like the villain, but they're like, I'm sorry, I just really love this other person.
Yeah.
I like that Fran is actually pretty cool. Like, yeah. I didn't watch that being like, oh, she's the worst. Like, let's get rid of her so that these two can get together, you know?
She's quite likable.
Yeah, I think at one point I wrote, you're too good for him, dump him.
All right, I need to know the answer to this question.
Okay.
Team Massimo or Team Steve?
I mean, for the sake of the rom-com, of course, Team Steve, mm-hmm. but also Massimo is so sweet. And when he was like, you don't have to love me, but I'll love you so much. And I was like, oh my God,
that's so sad.
It was so sad. And like I said, I'm a huge Grey's Anatomy fan. So just the fact that it was coming from this Alex Karev body just made me so happy. And he was so small and cute, and I loved him. But also, he was ridiculous and half a character. So.
Yeah, he's a total caricature.
Yeah.
Yeah, he really is. But he's got such a cute face.
He's so cute!
He's got his little Vespa, which just added to the caricatureness of it all, but yes. I kind of also loved it.
And when he's like, can I make you dinner? And he just makes her mac and cheese. And then she's like, this is what you make. He's like, I've had it 3 times today already.
He's only eating mac and cheese.
Isn't he also like 22 or something?
He must have been so young.
I think they said his age at one point, and I was like, oh no.
They did. And they're supposed to be like the same age.
No.
I have a couple choice quotes about Massimo that, like, J-Lo, when her dad was like, hey, I'm gonna set you up with Massimo. She was like, what? The kid who ate mud? And then she's like, he followed me around all summer asking if I had a vagina.
It's like, just such a real thing.
This all tracks.
I'm Team Steve because that's who Mary really wants. Mm-hmm. And they do have undeniable chemistry and tension. And I would like to think, yes, Steve is being a untrustworthy kind of sleazebag when it comes to, I don't know, emotionally cheating or straying from Fran and, like, going on a date with Mary and being that kind of guy. Mm-hmm. I will give him a mulligan and say, maybe this is the one time he's doing this because she is that special. All right? I'll give him that.
In rom-com world, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. He's good. He's so loyal. This is just true love.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. Yeah. That's what happened. Okay, guys?
Yeah.
But I do think Massimo's sweet, and I love that he proposed to her with a dollhouse. That's actually really wonderful and great.
Yeah. So that was so sweet.
And I know he's going to be okay, because when they went to the fair, mm-hmm. or the movie, to, you know, drop off Steve, Eddie, he saw another girl and he was like, hey.
Oh. See, they always have to do that.
Mary doesn't want me.
He always has to do that. And I don't know, I will say, as sweet as Massimo is, he is problematic in his own way. He's a bit of a stalker. He does not have any sense of boundaries. Yeah. He's an idiot. Mm-hmm. A lovable idiot. And he's definitely got, like, outdated views of masculinity and, like, gender dynamics, you know? He is kind of that tropey guy, the nice guy that's like, I'll love you better than anyone else. Sure, you don't care about my personality or my interests, but I am a warm body who will love you. That should be enough, right? Mm-hmm. Like, he is kind of that trope.
Yeah, definitely.
Which is harmful in other movies where that guy does win. So in this one, he doesn't.
Yeah.
Right, guys?
Yeah. And he's just Justin Chambers.
Yeah.
So cute.
He's 22. He'll learn.
Yeah.
He'll go take a women's studies class and figure it out.
Yes. Yes. In the sequel, he'll find true love.
So in this movie, Mary, J-Lo is part of a YMCA Scrabble league. Which
is adorable.
It's really cute. And I think mm-hmm. it's like a nice little change up from like, oh, she's like kind of a dork, but instead of being a klutz, she has this like really intelligent, cool thing that she's a part of. And I also like it because Roxane Gay is also like a competitive Scrabble player.
Is? Yeah, I didn't know that. She has a really long essay about it Feminist.
Yeah.
And I was like, I want to be in a Scrabble
club. It really makes you want to do it.
Yeah.
And like, it sounds so competitive and, like, political and stuff.
Intellectual and fun.
Ooh. Yeah.
But it just seems like it's very fun and,
introduces some very sweet elderly characters as friends of J-Lo's, Mary, in this movie. And Bert is one of them. And I just thought that he had a couple of the funniest lines in this whole movie.
He was great. I loved him.
Yeah. And so when he said, "A girl asks you to dance, you dance."
Yes.
I love that. I was like, that's just solid advice.
Yes.
And also Pride and Prejudice, you know, he could have taken that advice. Mr. Darcy, turning Elizabeth down. Anyway, we'll talk about Pride and Prejudice in every episode.
Yeah.
And then also when her dad wakes her up by measuring her for her wedding dress,
oh, yeah.
Bert comes in with a bagel.
Yeah.
The dad was like, "Go toast the bagel." And he was like, "Yeah, yeah, I toast when I see fit." And I just thought that was the funniest thing. He has a bagel already with cream cheese on it. And he's like, "Yeah, yeah, I'll toast this bagel whenever I want." So I just enjoyed that a lot. I think those kind of little characters make a rom-com even better.
Oh, yeah. I need the side characters. I also think Mary was pretty cool.
Yeah.
You know? Like, she wasn't... She had her weird things or whatever, but she seemed pretty normal for a rom-com lead.
Yeah.
She really did.
She just likes a quiet night at home in front of Antiques Roadshow.
Yeah.
While using a plastic trick thing to fold her blouses.
Oh, yeah. She likes order.
She's type A. She's very type A. Yeah. You know this.
But not so type A that she's sexless, right?
Right. Also, the whole side plot of if she planned their wedding, she was going to get
a
promotion. Partner. Yeah, she's going to become partner at this wedding planner firm, which is definitely not a real thing.
No. I'm like, you guys have an office?
Yeah, which is like a crazy fancy office. And I'm like, she's not the top planner? What does the top planner look like?
And you can be a partner of a planning firm?
Yeah.
This isn't lawyers.
Yeah, but it felt like it was going to add stakes. Like, she wanted them to get married so she could make partner, but that never really came up again.
Yeah, they totally dropped that.
She very handily, like, gave it off to Judy Greer at the end.
Also, that multi-million dollar wedding that was going to be featured in wedding magazines is now no more.
Yeah.
So, like, whew, that's a big explosion.
She's definitely not making partner now.
No.
But she found love, so that's okay.
She found love.
She didn't need her career anymore.
Love conquers all.
Mm-hmm.
A common trope that I found in this movie was the speech that Fran makes about all the things she hates about Steve. Which kind of reminded me a bit about, like, when Harry Met Sally and, like, other movies where it's, like, if you really love someone or if you really hate someone, you list a bunch of specific quirks.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, in this one, she just listed, like, "I hate the songs he sings in the shower. I hate that he doesn't like colored M&Ms. I hate the way he lifts his left pant leg after he eats."
That's so insane. Why does he do that?
Why your left pant leg?
What does that accomplish?
Why not both pant legs?
What would lifting a pant leg... Like, that wouldn't ease the pains of being full.
Does he have a bunion on his
leg? I don't understand.
Does he have a blood clot in his
calves?
Yeah. What does that mean?
I don't understand.
If someone knows what this means, please, please, please send us an email.
I really want to know.
I just love that, like, those speeches are so... It's like a list of specific quirks that are not quirks to me. Like if I were to list like quirks about someone, it's like, I hate that they only read magazines, or I hate that they don't like going to the beach, or I don't know, like, that's specific. But it's not like I've never been like, I hate the way his left cheek dimple vibrates when he is singing a song. Like, I don't know what.
Yeah, or like, I hate that he puts his left shoe on first on Tuesdays.
On Tuesdays.
It's like, me. What?
Yeah. It's just...
Fran was just... She was done. And she was like, whatever. These are just some things that I can think of right now.
Yeah.
They had bigger problems.
Yeah.
I just didn't want to get into them.
Yeah.
Like, I hate the fact that he talks to other women and, and lies to me about it.
He goes on dates with other women.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyway, we loved this movie.
10 out of 10.
It's great. It's such a classic. It doesn't always handle, you know, we talked about it, the race and gender specifics as well as we would like. And they really start off with the deportation joke pretty quickly.
Yeah, they do. I was like, oh no.
Yeah. Oof. But there is so much to like about it.
Yes.
And you are along for the ride And I feel like the beats of the movie really go well.
I wouldn't say it's like the beats go well. I wouldn't say it's my favorite rom-com, no. Or even one of my favorites, but I enjoyed it and I would watch it again.
It was one of my favorites for a while.
Yeah?
Actually, yeah. I remember loving that statue scene when they're walking along the garden.
When he breaks the penis off.
He breaks the penis off the statue and then it gets glued to his hand.
They play it in such an underrated way that it's really, really funny.
It's very funny.
J-Lo is very funny. She has amazing comedic timing.
Mm-hmm.
When she yells, "I'm a goddamn professional."
Yeah.
Whatever, I'm a professional, goddamn. She makes me laugh out loud all the time in this.
Yeah.
I wish she did more movies now.
She is in a rom-com that came out, I think this year, called Second Act.
Oh, that's right.
Milo Ventimiglia. I fully want to see that movie. I'm going to see it.
I totally forgot about that.
She is trying to like get back out there.
We need it.
Especially, I think she is a great rom-com lead. Like, when I think of classic rom-com leads, I think Meg Ryan, Reese Witherspoon,
Julia Roberts,
J-Lo.
Yeah.
J-Lo. Legit, she's like one of the ones.
Yeah.
Anyway.
She is.
Caitlin.
Yeah.
We would love to ask you the question we love asking our guests, which is, how have rom-coms kind of affected your life or your view of love or made you, I don't know, do something
crazy
because a rom-com influenced you?
Yeah, I think it's interesting because as much as I love the genre, I've never made a rom-com move myself, which is crazy, and I should. I think that was the takeaway from me thinking about it this week. But I do think it has influenced how I perceive like my relationships with people I'm interested in or even people I'm not interested in. Because I'm just like, oh, they stared at me. They love me.
Yeah.
Or like, you know, like those things we see in rom-coms all the time. Or if it's like someone's poking fun at me, I'm like, oh, they love me. This is the beginning. We hate each other. You know? And I feel like it's influenced my life, but not in a good way.
I think that's the answer for a lot of us, honestly. Okay, exactly. Yeah.
Well, I think probably because a lot of the stuff that are the good signs of love to come in rom-coms are A, unrealistic, and B, a lot of times unhealthy.
Yeah, true. Very true. And also, all of these films, at the end of the day, had their big decisions made by men. So
that's true.
And they're supposed to be female-focused film.
Yeah.
So maybe the exception of, like, the Nora Ephron movies.
Right.
We're not really getting the female perspective.
Yeah. It's a good point.
Yeah. So, yeah, I sort of am like, oh, shit, what does love look like in the real world? I don't really know.
Can you think of any new rom-coms that maybe are doing a better job of that?
I have one that I saw the other day.
Was it Someone Great?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, we all saw Someone Great.
Yeah. It wasn't really a rom-com, just in the sense it didn't follow the formula, and it had a happy ending, but not in the way that you would think a rom-com would have. But I loved it so much, and I hope that there will be more movies like that, because it was great, and it felt real.
Yeah, I noticed a trend in more female-focused rom-coms where, in some ways, the woman decides she would rather choose herself over romance.
Yeah, which is great.
Yeah.
Actually, I just thought something. I do have a bone to pick with modern rom-coms a little bit, because we had, what was that movie? I Feel Pretty?
Yeah, with Amy Schumer.
Which I thought was like a good rom-com. And that one that just came out with Rebel Wilson.
Isn't it romantic?
Yeah, which I didn't like.
I didn't see that one.
I heard it was more dated. Really liked it.
Really?
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I was in a bad mood when I watched it. So I'll watch it again.
No.
But I love seeing like a, you know, not conventionally, they're both beautiful, but you know what I mean? Like not like the models that we're used to seeing.
Mm-hmm.
But the male leads are always so schlubby in those movies.
Yeah.
And it really bothers me because it's like, okay, no, like they shouldn't have to have a lesser leading man just because whoever's making this movie doesn't think they're
just because
attractive
the studio
enough
thinks.
Or whatever. Yeah. And that trend really bothers me. So like, I was kind of cheering for Amy Schumer to end up with the like hot model brother in I Feel Pretty. I don't know if you saw it. didn't. Just because I was like, why can't she have this guy? Right. Like, he's interested in her. Whatever. I think the male lead was Rory Scovel.
Yeah.
Who's adorable. Like, yeah. Don't get me wrong, but...
Yeah, but it's like, it'd be nice to see her with, like, a crazy hot piece. Like,
and they kind of played with that in Isn't It Romantic, where Liam Hemsworth is the guy. Which is just like, it would have been kind of cool if she'd ended up with him, just because...
Right, why not?
Yeah. More diversity in general, across the board, through everything. Every type of diversity.
Let's all raise our glasses. More diversity across the board.
In everything.
In everything.
Universal diversity.
Universal diversity.
Uniform
diversity. Everything should be the same in that it is very diverse.
Oh, God. Well, thanks so much for coming to the pod, Caitlin.
Thank you.
Such a joy.
So fun to talk about rom-coms.
Oh, my God. I will come back anytime. Oh,
they're imperfect, but God, if they're not fun to watch.
Yeah. So much fun.
Caitlin, you have a podcast yourself, don't you?
I do. I have a podcast about something that's kind of the rom-com of reality TV, Vanderpump Rules. Mm-hmm. It's called Vanderpumped. We're watching every episode of Vanderpump Rules from the very beginning. You can get it on iTunes or Podbean. Yeah.
And you can catch
me on Twitter, please.
On Twitter with her hilarious tweets.
Please follow me on Twitter. It's at Caitlin Gilbs, CaitlinGilbs. Check it out. Instagram as well.
Also, catch her on the indie circuit.
Indie circuit, please.
And that's the indie improv circuit.
Yeah.
Not music.
No movies.
No. Indie improv circuit. And catch us next week on the Rom-Com Effect.
With me, Lena.
Me, Lena.
And you, Katie.
Okay, I got it.
Okay, bye.
Okay, bye. Thanks. 'Com pod.
Nope.
Is that not what it's called?
Nope. Not at all. It's called the Rom-Com Effect.
Like, that's an interesting name.
Bored.
I'm embarrassed.